is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dan Madhavapullo, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we are jumping on to talk some NBA. Had a few interesting things happen tonight, but also going to talk some Cavs, talk some Jokic and Embiid, talk some Grayson Allen hard fouling, and where are we starting, Jay?
We're starting with our trivia tonight. And so if you missed the episode last week, we talked about how it was kind of getting ridiculous to find the players and try to predict what team they played on. And so Mike and I said, Mike, I'm gonna do trivia. And we're gonna pull trivia that's like current, because I think that's way better for us to talk about, because then it can maybe lead into conversations if we want to lead into conversations about it, rather than me just pulling random trivia out of the sky. Does that sound good, Mike? That sounds like
sounds good, man. Throw it at me. I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. So this was not an original trivia question. I have three for you tonight because this literally just went out there. And I'm going to thank for all of my trivia questions tonight. I'm going to thank ESPN Stats and Info. I want to make sure I'm giving them credit for pulling the questions directly from their tweets. So I'm not always going to do that because I don't want you to be that predictable, Mike. But tonight I'm pulling all my questions from ESPN Stats and Info. So here we go. Cade Cunningham tonight finished with 34 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks, and 6 three-pointers. He's the third rookie in the last 40 seasons to lead his team in all 6 categories in a game, along with these two players.
So these are only rookies.
Rookies. You have to be a rookie.
In the last 40 years.
In the last 40 years. So that gets us, I don't know how good your math is now, you, since you teach PE, but it gets us back to 1982, Mike, just so you know.
Wow. This could go in a million different directions.
Well, here's what I'll say, Mike. Both of these players are definitely in the top 75 players of all time. There's no obscurities here.
Definitely in the top 75. Okay. I'm going to say, wow, the blocks is what's throwing me off. Michael Jordan.
There you go.
And there's one more. I'm going to say, man, let's go, man. I keep wanting to say Akeem, but I know Akeem didn't make enough threes to do that.
No, so, here's the other thing I'll say is it's not someone that you would expect to be blocking people.
So I guess my next guess would be Allen Iverson.
There you go. Good job, Mike.
All right. So I didn't do too bad. I had three names in my head, and I kept thinking of Akeem, obviously, because of the blocks. But then Akeem doesn't hit.
LeBron never entered your mind. LeBron never, you never crossed it as a rookie with how bad that rookie Cavs team was.
No, it just felt like
he wasn't really a 3-point. She wasn't a 3-point shooter.
Yeah, it felt like it was just. It felt like it was going to be an older guy for whatever reason. I don't know. In my head, that's just the direction I went immediately. So, all right, I didn't do too bad on that one.
Okay, here we go. Joel Embiid tonight, and I had this question before, Joel Embiid has his fourth straight game of at least 35 points and 10 rebounds. He's the fourth player with a streak that long since the 1976-1977 merger. He joins Shaquille O'Neal and Anthony Davis at four games. Who's the only player to have a longer streak, five games? I can give you the year if you want the year.
Well, hold on. Let me think it through first. So 35 points and
10 rebounds
since the 76-77 merger.
Yes.
All right. So you said it was Shaq.
Shaq and Anthony Davis had four straight games.
Right. Okay. So somebody else has done that for five. Who is that somebody else?
That is the question.
35 and 10. So I guess your candidates are, so I'm going to talk through my candidates. Kareem has to be a candidate, although I think his super high scoring days were probably earlier than the merger. So I'm not sure it's Kareem, but he would probably be a good guess considering he's the all-time leading scorer in the history of the league. Then you'd have to go, man, 35, like I think of Moses obviously having lots of rebounds, but I don't see Moses having 35 plus points. I'm going to say Akeem.
That is incorrect.
David Robinson.
That is incorrect. You want me to give you the year? I can give you the year.
Sure, give me the year.
87-88, yep.
So that was that might have been the year Jordan averaged 37. So could it have been Michael Jordan?
No. That's too obvious of an answer. It's the guy that he lost an MVP to one time.
Karl Malone?
There you go.
All right. 35 and 10. That makes sense. Malone, second all-time leading scorer. Yeah. Always over 10 rebounds. I could see that.
Okay. All right. Where's this last one at? Okay, here we go. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Embiid's on a tear. Maybe we'll dive into that a little bit here, but, Embiid's on quite a tear right now. All right. Chris Paul recorded his 479th career game with at least 10 points and 10 assists on Monday, tying this player for the third most games with 10 assists and 10 rebounds, or 10, I'm sorry, 10 points and 10 rebounds in NBA history. Third most game with 10 points.
So we're looking for the player that has the third most games of 10 points and 10 rebounds?
No, 10 points and 10 assists.
10 points and 10 assists. All right, so Man.
But by the way, Darius Garland might be ascending this list.
So I got to believe that John Stockton has got to be close to the top of that list.
I would hazard a guess he's probably number one, Mike. I don't have the list of one and two, but I would have to hazard a guess that he's number one.
I would have to guess that Magic has got to be up there. I would have to guess that Jason Kidd has to be up there. I'm going to go – give me Jason Kidd.
It's none of the names you mentioned, Mike. Okay. It's going to be – I think you're going to be –
Steve Nash?
No, I think you're really going to be surprised by the name.
All right. I got nothing.
It's Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
Are you surprised by that?
Not really. I mean, I guess when you think about – clearly the hard part of that is the 10 assist piece of it. So considering Oscar averaged a triple-double one season, he probably had quite a few 10-point, 10-assist games. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So this was the honorable mention. This was the other one from yesterday, and then we'll move on to talking about actual things. 51 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists on Sunday. Jason Tatum joined Jaylen Brown as the fourth pair of teammates in NBA history with 50-point, 10-rebound games in the same season. Okay.
Okay.
So the other groups of players that have done this in the NBA history, 2 years ago, Giannis and Chris Middleton.
Okay.
Then it hadn't happened before that since 1961-62. There were two teams that had players that did that in 61-62. Elgin Baylor and a guy I've never heard of, Rudy LaRusso. Have you ever heard of Rudy LaRusso, Mike?
I have not heard of Rudy LaRusso. I can honestly say I've never heard of him.
For the Lakers. And then in 61-62 for St. Louis, I don't know who they were, St. Louis back then.
St. Louis Hawks. St. Louis Hawks.
So can you guess who was on the St. Louis Hawks in 61-62?
Bob Pettit's
the one I heard of.
And
he has a bar named after him that you might eat for protein.
Cliff Hagan.
There you go. There you go.
All right.
Have you heard of Cliff? You've heard of Cliff Hagan.
I've heard of Cliff Hagan.
Rudy LaRusso. You've never heard of
Rudy LaRusso is a new one on me, but Cliff Hagan I have heard of.
If I would have guessed, said what team did he start for in 1961-62?
Yeah, you could have spelled out his entire name, and I still would not have known Rudy LaRusso. Apologies to Rudy if he's still with us.
No, he passed away in 2004. Okay. Rudy LaRusso was a 5-time All-Star in the NBA. His nickname was Roughhouse Rudy.
Honestly, I've never heard of him.
He played for 11 seasons in the NBA. He played for 9 seasons with Minneapolis/Los Angeles, and he finished his career with the San Francisco Warriors. He ended with 11,500 career points, almost 7,000 rebounds, and 1,500 assists.
My apologies to Rudy for not knowing who he is.
And he looks like he was a pretty durable player. He has played at least 79 games in all but one season of his career.
No load management for Rudy.
And he averaged for his career. That's pretty impressive. For his career, he averaged almost 16 points a game.
All right.
So there you go. Averaged double digits his whole career. That's pretty impressive for a guy I've never heard of before.
That is. That'll work.
All right. He went to Dartmouth. There you go.
Okay. Ivy leaguer. Smart guy, too.
Yeah, smart. He was a power forward center at the height of 6'5".
So that sounds about right.
There's the NBA in 1961 for you.
Sounds about right.
All
right.
So there's our trip down memory lane, Mike. I kind of enjoyed that. Is that more enjoyable than doing the starters at this point, right? Would you agree with that statement?
I think the starters become a challenge just with the way the season is now. But yeah. That's good. Those are good. All right. Trivias are good.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about the Cavs. We're going to start the podcast with the Cavs. We just like talking about the Cavs, so we're going to talk about the Cavs. This week they went 2-1, losing the Chicago game, although, you know, they just didn't look right in the Chicago game. And Chicago was man down, and we'll get to Chicago here shortly, but I'm not completely discouraged. In the last two games, like yesterday, they beat the Knicks. And the Knicks have been playing better. I'm still not saying they're good, but they've been playing better of late. So we didn't have Jared Allen, who's a huge focal point of our team. They also are out Lauri Markkanen, who hurt his ankle.
which they're being very unclear with how long he's going to be out. But, you know, he was finally starting to actually play basketball again. So this happened, you know, he was playing good at the beginning of the season, got COVID, and then went in a slump, and now he's playing. Of course, he was playing better, and he turned his ankle pretty good. So I'm still super encouraged by the Cavs. There was a great Ringer piece that you shared with me. Right, I think they listened to our podcast, Mike, and immediately said, we're going to write a piece about what those guys are talking about. So I don't know why we didn't get credit in that piece. I just want to put that out there, Mike. But anyways, I'm encouraged by the Cavs. Their schedule is fantastic for the next month. So even if, you know, Markkanen can't play into the All-Star break, like just looking at the schedule, I feel comfortable about pretty much every game except for the game tomorrow. could they win tomorrow? Sure. They played the Bucks, but I'm super encouraged. I don't know if you saw Shams did an interview with Darius Garland. It was like a 6.5-7 minute interview. And then, Winhurst and, some other, who was the other person, did a podcast with Colby Altman. I thoroughly enjoyed that, just listening to his story and listening to where he thinks the Cavs are going. And I was super encouraged. And, you know, listen, we've talked about it. We've probably beat the dead horse on this. The Cavs are way better than we thought they were going to be. You and I think I was more optimistic on the Cavs than you were. But the fact that we are sitting at, in you know, January 25th and they are in the number five seed, half of a game behind Milwaukee, which theoretically, if they were to beat Milwaukee tomorrow, they'll be ahead of Milwaukee. I think that if you would have told me that on the first day of school or the first day of the season, I would have bet the house that that wasn't possible. So, Mike, your thoughts?
Well, let's go back to this week. I think, one, the loss to Chicago, despite the fact that they were down some players in that game and LaVine still wasn't back, although he's back now. But that to me was sort of a schedule loss. You come off that 6-game road trip, you come home, you get a big win over Brooklyn, albeit without Durant. And then 2 days later, you turn around and you make a side trip to Chicago. And Chicago, I believe, had lost 4 in a row. So they were kind of desperate home game. Just to me, that was kind of a schedule loss. And then you look at the Oklahoma City and Knicks games, and those are both games that the Cavs probably easily could have lost. I don't think they played particularly well in either of the games. New York, they were kind of buzzing along through midway through the third quarter, and then all of a sudden it just sort of kind of fell apart. They had a 15-point lead, and before you knew it, the Knicks were right there knocking on the door to try to get them, you know, try to win that game. And Oklahoma City was a similar game. So those are games that I think that bad teams figure out a way to lose and good teams figure out a way to win. And the Cavs did just enough to figure out how to win. In the Knicks game, Garland hits the three in the corner. Mobley goes to the line. He's only 1 for 4, but then he comes up with some big defensive plays. And the Cavs make it really difficult down the stretch in the last couple of possessions for the Knicks to score. And they pull that one out. So when you look at where they're sitting right now, even though they're in fifth place, if you look out, as we've talked about, this next 10, 12, 15 games, whatever you want to call it, there's a lot of below 500 teams, a lot of teams that are not going to be in the playoffs, a lot of games that they should theoretically win. Now, they're down Markkanen. Obviously, Allen was out the other night, but this team just seems to have a resilience to it that leads you to believe that they're going to be able to continue. We keep saying it almost like, if you've listened to the podcast, I think you can sense that Jason and I, there's still a part of us that don't quite 100% believe that this team is what it is, but we're more than halfway through the season and we still have a top five defense. The offense is still middle of the road, but this team figures out how to win, and their three best players, when you talk Garland, you talk Allen, you talk Mobley, are all under 23 years old. All three of them have very specific skill sets that they're all going to be at some point very soon, maybe as soon as this year, all-star players. And if not this year, I think for certain, if Mobley doesn't make it, which it doesn't look like he's probably going to, but I think he becomes a fixture.
He's going to be on the all-defensive team, on one of the teams, right?
He has to be. I don't see how
he. You saw I sent you the article. He's fifth right now.
Yeah, I mean his statistical. Yeah, his statistical profile from a defensive standpoint. When you think about his on-off numbers, when you think about the number of shots defended at the rim, when you think about the percentage that guys shoot when he's in the area. I mean, he ranks right at the top of the league in all those categories. And that doesn't even take into account his ability to step out on the floor and guard smaller players, which is really what gives the Cavs the flexibility to be able to play him and Jared Allen together along with Markkanen. So
I've been super encouraged about his offense too, Mike, because, you know, everything we heard in the offseason, like, he's definitely a work in progress, but, like, he's just riding on his confidence right now on the offensive end of the floor. And like, he shot a three yesterday and he didn't hesitate at all. He just shot it and it went in, and he took some other threes that, and it was late in the game too. I think it was fourth quarter. He hit that three, and every, you know, these teams are having problems. You know, there's less problems now with Markkanen out, but with guarding Mobley and Markkanen, and Markkanen's not a post player, but like, when they get these little guys on them, I mean, anytime, I don't remember what game that was that Mobley was just like, all right, this little guy is going to guard me. I'm just going to back him down. And he didn't always score, but like, I've been super impressed by his offensive game. And, you know, he's definitely like, Mike, do you think the potential, I'm not saying he's a surefire, there's potential that he could theoretically be the best player on a championship team, theoretically. He's a rookie, so this may be a leap, but does he have the potential to be the best player on a championship team at some point in his career? Yes or no?
I think the answer to that is yes, and I look at it as, one, he's already where he's at defensively, and then you think about the typical learning curve for young bigs in the league, and typically it's a struggle for not just a year, but multiple years before they start to figure it out. And he's already figured that end of the floor out. Like, I mean, if you just said he's going to play at this level for the rest of his career, you would be ecstatic beyond words.
He's a Hall of Famer if he plays at this level his whole career, right?
And so, you take that on the defensive end of the floor and say, all right, if he can just, and you know he's going to get better, but let's just say, theoretically, he only maintains what he's doing at the defensive end of the floor, he's going to get better offensively. I think the two things when I look at him that he needs to improve.
Free throw shooting.
Well, he's shooting 76% from the line. So if you're a 7'1" guy and you can shoot 76% from the line for your career, would you like to see it above 80? Sure. But if he only shoots 76% from the line for the rest of his career, that's not going to be something that's going to – it's not going to hurt him. If he can get up to 80, between 80 and 85.
I have him at 67% for the season, Mike.
I thought he was shooting 70. I thought I saw somewhere he was shooting 76%.
Maybe it was yesterday when he shot 1 of 6 down the stretch that dropped him. I have him at 67%.
Okay, well, he's got to improve that. You got to get to the mid-70s. So otherwise, if you're below 70, then it becomes a liability. So my fault if my own whatever, checking out that out was wrong. So he's got to get to the mid-70s, but I think the two biggest things for me is, one, his handle's got to get better. And look, we might be spoiled watching Giannis and watching Kevin Durant at 7'1" or 6'11" or 7', however tall those guys are, whatever you want to put them at, handle the ball like little point guards. But if Mobley can develop his handle to the point where he doesn't even have to get to necessarily that level. Now, if he wants to be the best player on a championship team, he does. But he's going to improve his handle at some point. And as that gets better, it's just going to open up so much more stuff for him. And then the second thing he has to do is he's got to get stronger. Because right now, you mentioned when little guys get switched off on him, he can back down some little guys, but anybody who's close to his size, when he goes to back them down, it's not really happening for him. I mean, he can jump over guys, especially on the lobs, and he had a huge rebound yesterday. And there's things that he can do, but if he had a little bit more strength, and he obviously has a pretty high center of gravity because his legs are so long, and my kids always are like, he looks like a giraffe. And he does. He really looks like, when you watch him play, he looks like a high school kid playing out there in the NBA. I mean, just the way he moves. It's not slow, but he just is smooth. Like, everywhere he goes, he never looks like he's exerting himself to sprint to a spot. And yet he's always exactly where he should be. So to me, from an offensive standpoint, he's got to get better with his handle, and then he's got to get stronger. And if he does those two things, it's going to open up a ton. Like you mentioned, his threes, like when he shoots the ball, it looks like a shot that is going to go in. Does it always go in? No. But he has a shot that can develop, and he's going to get better with that over time from distance. And as his handle improves, he's going to get better being able to shoot pull-up twos and shoot from the mid-range and those kinds of things that are plays and shots that superstars have to have in their bag. You can't just be, if you're going to be the best player on a championship team, you can't be just a guy who's shooting standstill threes. You have to be able to do lots and lots of different things as an offensive player. So he's got a long way to go to fulfill that level of potential. But when you look at the tools, the physical tools that he has, you look at his ability to pass the ball, you look at his sense of understanding, especially on the defensive end of the floor, of where he's supposed to be and what he's supposed to do, I think it'd be crazy to say that he couldn't do that. Now, will he? I don't know. A lot of that just depends on what's his work ethic. I think we'll have a pretty good indication at the start of next season when he comes back and you see what he looks like next season compared to what he looked like this season from an offensive standpoint. But the potential is definitely there for Mobley to be one of the best five players in the league. I don't think there's any question about that. And then you look at Jared Allen and Darius Garland, and Allen is not on the same level, I don't think, as Garland or Mobley. But Allen is going to continue to be a productive player for years and years and years because he just plays so hard and he doesn't try to do more than what he's capable of. And when you have a guy that plays hard and knows what he's capable of doing and does it to the best of his ability and has improved as much as Jared Allen has improved over the course of his short NBA career to this point, you got to believe that he's going to continue to get better. And then Garland, I mean, you and I had written him off. We've talked about this a bunch of times. Like, I really felt like when he was a rookie that, man, this guy, I don't know what we have here. But what we have here now is a guy who I think he makes the All-Star team this year, if not as a reserve in the initial round. But when guys go out with injury, I think there's no doubt that he's going to be on the team in one way, shape, or form. And it's hard to imagine that if he stays healthy, he's not going to be a guy who perennially is going to be in All-Star games. And so you're talking about a potential top five player, a guy who's going to be an, at worst, an above average starter. And Jared Allen's probably going to be an All-Star this year. And Darius Garland, who I think is going to be year in, year out, he's going to be a perennial All-Star at this point. He's that good. And so those three guys make a nice foundation. And it's still, to some degree, I still keep looking at the standings and looking at the team and looking at the expectations coming to the year and think, man, is this really sustainable? But then you keep looking at the other teams around them and I'm like, man, it feels like it is. Like, we're really going to finish above the play-in game. And who knows, maybe even better than that. If we take advantage of this next run in the schedule, we could easily, come March 1st, we could easily be first place in the Eastern Conference, easily. Now, that doesn't mean we'll stay there because the schedule does toughen up once you get to March. But, man, by March 1st, if we're not right there at the top of the conference, I'm going to be kind of disappointed because it means we haven't played as well as we're capable of.
Yep, I agree. And shout out Kevin Love, fourth all-time rebounding. You know, he's been integral. And, you know, I think the Cavs are definitely, I think they're going to make a move, Mike. I think they have to make a move.
What's out there for them? What do you think?
Well, so there's been some rumors. Gary Harris has been rumored. Now, does Gary Harris make you, I mean, is he better than Rondo at this point in his career? I would guess maybe
Gary
slightly.
Gary Harris in a point guard. What do you want?
And listen, I'm saying that he's been rumored.
Okay, listen, I'm just giving my commentary on the names that you're throwing at me. So I would not want Gary Harris because to me, Gary Harris is Isaac Okoro. If I'm getting a guy that is going to play in the backcourt, then I want a guy with a different skill set than what we already have. So I need a guy who can shoot. And Gary Harris hasn't really been a very good shooter since his rookie year back in Denver. So, all right, throw him the next name at me.
Schroeder's been thrown out there.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know. Those are the two that I've seen.
Eric Gordon.
Well, Eric Gordon, you said you. I would be okay with Eric Gordon if we didn't.
Eric Gordon would be tremendous. Just a matter of what do you have to give up for him? Because Eric Gordon can shoot it. Eric Gordon can put it on the floor a little bit. Eric Gordon can defend. He would honestly be a guy that would fit, I think, really, really well into what this team needs, because he can do it on both ends of the floor and he's a shooter. And so he brings something to the table in the backcourt that you don't have with Rondo or Okoro. And so I wouldn't mind seeing Eric Gordon again. The question is, what's the price? And I think it comes down to Sexton, right? It comes down to what do the Cavs think they're going to do with him and how does that fit into next season? And then it also comes down to how much do teams around the league value what Colin Sexton is, especially coming off the knee injury. Now, by all accounts, the meniscus tear he had fixed, it's not going to be something that long-term is going to jeopardize his career. It shouldn't jeopardize his value on the trade market. It shouldn't jeopardize his value to the Cavs if they end up re-signing him. But still, he hasn't played. He's going to not have played for a year or whatever if he gets dealt in the offseason or whatever it might be. So I don't know what the value is of Colin Sexton around the league and what you could get if you packaged Sexton at a number one pick. What
about
level
Rubio's contract too?
Yeah, but you're just trading into cap space, right? You're not trading with a team that, I guess, if you're not getting any value back, if a team just wants salary filler, maybe you're trying to open up cap space if you're a team, so you got Rubio's expiring on the books. But I think the question is the value. What's the value of Sexton and a Cavs number one pick? What level of player can that get you? Can that get you Eric Gordon? And if it does, do you want to trade 23-year-old Colin Sexton or 24-year-old Colin Sexton for 33-year-old Eric Gordon? Do you think Sexton is part of your long-term plans, or do you think that Eric Gordon is a guy that can come in and, quote, put you over the top? I mean, look, as good as the Cavs are, and maybe if things break right and injuries and all this stuff, maybe they can finish in the 1-2-3 seed in the Eastern Conference. But in my heart of hearts, I can't believe that they're a legitimate title contender at this point.
Come on, Mike.
So do you really want to give up a 23-year-old guy in Sexton who averaged 24 points a game last year for a guy who's 33 to make a run to the second round of the playoffs? I'm not sure I want to make that trade.
I see your point, Mike. And I don't have an answer for that. But all right.
What would you do? I mean, if the trade was Sexton and a 2026 number one pick, would you make that deal for Eric Gordon if you were the Cavs?
Is Eric Gordon the only player you're getting?
Yeah, let's just say that's the only that's what it is.
It's a tough one.
Who do you want? Şengün? John Wall?
No,
not John. I don't think you can do that if you're the Cavs. Unless you've completely soured on Sexton, I just don't think you can give up a 23-year-old guy for a 33-year-old guy when, as good as they've been, I just don't think they have a legitimate chance to win the title. I mean, I think they can maybe get to the second round, but I think even making the Eastern Conference Finals, unless they happen to run into some injury luck or some things just break right for them, I just don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they've proved this wrong all season, but I wouldn't mortgage the future just to try to win two or three more playoff games this year. Because you have your foundation. Your foundation is those three guys that we already talked about. And going forward, those guys are only going to continue to get better for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years. So to me, I would not be mortgaging anything. I would want to be as flexible as I could, especially with a guy that I already have under contract, that I'm going to have more flexibility to do things with Colin Sexton, either in the summertime or I extend him or whatever. We offer him, you know, more money, less money, whatever it is. He's an asset that we have, and I'm not sure that I would deal that asset away just to try to win one more round of the playoffs this year when I don't have a legitimate chance to win at all.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. All right. I think we can move on.
We doing the schedule? You doing the schedule?
Let's do the schedule. Yeah, let's do the schedule really quick. So they play the Bucks tomorrow. They're going to lose. Sorry, Mike.
I think they're going to lose. I think based on the Oklahoma City and New York games where they gutted it out, but you're gutting it out against two lesser opponents. I'm not sure you can gut that out against Milwaukee.
And if they win, we can eat some crow. All right. Then they play. Then they have off until Sunday where they play Detroit. Who's watching that game at 6 p.m. during the AFC or during the NFC Championship game? Who's watching that? Anyways, I'll probably have it on like my small little iPad or something. I don't know. They're playing Detroit.
That's a win.
That's a win. And they're playing New Orleans at home on Monday. Back to back.
Which they lost to New Orleans before. I got to believe they're going to come out and take care of business in that game. So I got them going 2-1 at this point.
All right. I'll take a 2-1 this week. I'll take
okay.
All right. Moving on. So let's talk about I guess let's go back to what happened last week at the end of last week, the Grayson Allen injury. Or the Grayson Allen injury flagrant foul. We probably don't need to discuss this too much, but I think the Bucks are complete. Are they turning into heels, Mike? Like, this is ridiculous. First you had Grayson Allen literally like clearly a hard foul. And I know if this was the 80s and 90s, that probably was a typical foul back then. I get it. But that was clearly dirty. He's been a history of dirty players, been a history of dirty antics that he's done. And then the Milwaukee Bucks, and I know that the front office and the players don't have anything to do with this. The Milwaukee Bucks Twitter account the next morning, Mike, I know I sent it to you, posted a video of Grayson Allen drinking a cup of coffee saying, last night was a good night or something like that. Ridiculous. Like, what? Like, who's running their social media? Now, that tweet has since been deleted, by the way, Mike. Big shocker on that one. So then it was announced Caruso has to have surgery. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. On top of that, Lonzo Ball has surgery. So we can talk about the Bulls angle on this. And Grayson Allen got suspended for one game, and the Milwaukee Bucks statement, and I'm going to read it to you here, Mike. The Milwaukee Bucks statement on the Grayson Allen injury, or the Grayson Allen suspension. We disagree with the suspension, and we support Grayson and look forward to him rejoining our team for Friday's game versus New York. That was their statement.
I mean, okay, I guess you can say, hey, they're defending their guy, but if you watch that play, there's no way you can defend it. Like, the initial foul as Caruso's going up is pretty reckless. And when you're coming across on a guy who's in the air and you have a hold of his arm and he's already vulnerable, that was questionable. But then the second piece of it, when he grabs onto Caruso and does the extra tossing him towards the ground or pushing him down towards the ground with the other hand, I couldn't believe, honestly, when Caruso got up and kept playing. Like, when he went down, seeing that play, and that happened to be a game I was watching live, and when he went down, you thought, oh, I really felt like he was going to get up and, like, the bone of his arm was going to be sticking through the skin. I mean, that's really what it looked like when he went down. And the fact that he got up and played, I was stunned, frankly. I did not think that he was going to be able to get up and play. And then, of course, the news doesn't come out that he actually has the fractured wrist until the next day or whatever, later that night, whenever the news came out. And so I just think I'm surprised that Grayson Allen only got a one game suspension. That felt like at least, to me, that would have been a three game suspension. Seems like that would have been a reasonable outcome, regardless of whether or not he broke his wrist. I just think the play itself, when a guy's up in the air, and you're adding the extra look, if he just goes with the initial action, then it's probably a hard foul. It's probably a flagrant two, but it's not a suspendable. But the last motion where he grabs onto Caruso and then flings him towards the ground, to me, that's what pushes it over the edge. Mike, I would have given him 3 games if it was me.
Here's my problem, Mike. You know, he got a flagrant two and he got suspended for one game. Who was it in the Cavs game the other night that literally, who is the dummy that threw an elbow into Kevin Love? Who was that? Oh, God, who am I thinking of?
That was Dort. Yeah.
That's literally what's called a flagrant two as well. And I get that he shouldn't have done that, but those are on two totally, in my opinion, two totally different levels. And I understand that Grayson Allen got suspended for a game, but when I saw that Lou Dort got a flagrant two for the same, got literally the same call. I mean, I know you can't call it there's nothing more than a flagrant two, and I get that. But the fact that Allen only got suspended for one game, like to be honest with you, with I saw the Dort thing, I was like, oh, he's gonna get a flagrant one, and then it's gonna be over. And then he got a flagrant two. I'm like,
I didn't understand the flagrant two on that, and I kept looking at different angles. You know what I mean? I saw the first one, and I'm like, ooh, that didn't look. I mean, yeah, clearly he throws an elbow, but it doesn't look that bad. Maybe just because it didn't really truly connect.
Were the officials reacting to what happened with Caruso and Grayson Allen, and they didn't want anything to get out of hand? I mean, maybe it was the next day, so
yeah, maybe you don't know. But Grayson Allen, I thought he got away with one, only getting a one game suspension.
Especially because he's got a history of doing this.
Like, right.
This
correct. Is not, correct. Correct.
It's like a track record of it. So yeah. Anyway. And then obviously the other side of the spectrum, the Bulls.
It's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough because you take away the two major, other than DeRozan, but on the defensive end of the floor, Caruso and Lonzo have been critical to their early season success. Everybody knew that this team was going to be able to score, at least felt that offensively with DeRozan and LaVine and Vucevic, that they weren't going to have a whole lot of problems scoring points. The question was on the defensive end, and obviously Caruso and Lonzo were the key to them becoming a good defensive team. Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, never known particularly as strong defenders. Vooch could say the same thing, never known as a good defender. So what kind of a defense can the Bulls sustain without Caruso and Lonzo? That remains to be seen. I expect by the time those two guys are back 2 months from now, I do not expect the Chicago Bulls to be in second place in the Eastern Conference where they sit right now. I would expect they'd be down in that 6-7 range, somewhere in there, fighting to stay out of the play-in, because as good as LaVine and DeRozan are, without Caruso and Lonzo, who have been critical to their defensive success to this point, I think there's got to be a drop-off for the Bulls. And we're seeing it. They're 3-7 in their last 10, and they had a nice 2-3-4 game lead in the Eastern Conference 2 weeks ago, and that has evaporated. And yep. I would expect them to continue to go down the Eastern Conference pecking order. You look at, I guess you could say Brooklyn maybe is hoping to tread water without Durant.
Well, Milwaukee's the problem is you saw what happened with them tonight, Mike. I mean, you don't have Durant out there and you don't have Kyrie for home games. They lost to the Lakers, and Lakers have been pitiful. And we'll talk about them in a minute. But, like, I don't know about the Nets, man.
I think the Nets, like I said, my feeling on the Nets is at this point, they got to be happy to tread water. If they can play 500 basketball during this time without Durant, I think they'd probably be pretty happy with that. And I would bet Chicago is not going to play much better than 500 basketball without Caruso and Lonzo, unless LaVine and DeRozan just absolutely go crazy, which I guess from an offensive standpoint is possible. But I just don't think without those two guys that they're going to be able to do it. Dosunmu has been really good. The rookie out of Illinois, he's sort of stepped up, and maybe he'll be the guy that can fill one of those two spots. He certainly played really well in the time that he's been given, but I still think those are two guys that the Bulls are going to miss tremendously on the defensive end of the floor, and I would expect that they're going to drop in the Eastern Conference standings.
All right. Well, that's all we're going to talk about the NBA, is it the Central Division? The Central Division? Yeah,
Central Division. We got some Bucks, Bulls, Pacers, Cavs, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, but we got to talk about this game tonight, Mike, the Clippers-Wizards game. The Wizards are up 35 points.
In the first half. A 35-point lead in the first half. That is a drubbing.
And, well, you would think. The Clippers came back and they won the game, Mike. They were down 7 points with 20 seconds left. They were down 10 points with 35 seconds left. Entering Tuesday, teams were 1-16,239 over the last 20 seasons when trailing by 7-plus points with under 20 seconds remaining in regulation. The only other win was the Cleveland Cavaliers, January 2nd, 2014. So no LeBron against the Orlando Magic when they were led by the one, the only, Anderson Varejao, who led the team with 18 points and 25 rebounds.
Nice. Andy getting it done on the boards. By the way, one of our trivia guys had a big game for the Clippers. You see that? Amir Coffey, 29. 29. Oh, no, career, I did not high. See that. Career high for the Luke, Clippers. He had 29.
Luke, baby. Luke Kennard made the big shots, though. He made the big, big shots. And listen, it's good news for the Cavs that the Wizards lost. Like, listen, I am all for rooting for whatever happens that's going to help the Cavs. You know, I haven't done as much scoreboard watching and standing watching as I have this year, but like I already was looking for at tomorrow's and I'm like, all right, so who am I rooting for? I'm rooting for the Pacers to upset the Hornets. I'm rooting for the Kings to beat the Hawks, although the Kings only scored 75 points tonight against the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, that's brutal. By the way, they only had one guy in double figures.
Yes, Buddy Hield for 11 points. I saw that. I was going to ask you.
Off the bench. That was crazy.
I was going to ask you if I told you that the Kings, I figured you probably were looking at box scores. If I told you the Kings only had one player in double figures and it wasn't a starter, who do you think it was? Or that's crazy. Like, I can't think of another time, and I'm sure it's happened. And I maybe I'll have to try to do some research. Like, when has a team had a starter get to double digits? That doesn't happen very often, right?
I mean, yeah, I would say that can't be something that happens very often.
So anyways, we're rooting for the Kings, but we're not very hopeful for the Kings. We're rooting for the Knicks to upset the Heat tomorrow night. And let's see, what else are we doing? We're rooting for the Nuggets to beat the Nets on a back-to-back, and they don't have Kyrie again, so I feel good about that. We're going to root for the Raptors, and then we're going to root for the Cavs, obviously. And if all those things happen, Mike, I know that's a lot, the Cavs are half a game out of first place. So we're going to keep the hope alive, as you would like to say. But anyways.
There you go.
So anything you want to say about the fact that the Wizards blew a 35-point lead tonight?
Okay, I'm watching. Did you see the play? Did you see the shot?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The one before – which one? The one put him within three or the one that – the and one that – then ended up tying or having them win.
The and one is the one that I'm watching. Like, one, I'm not sure Beal fouled them. And two, they were trying to follow him way out on the floor. But then my favorite part of the highlight is just the Clippers bench just going bananas. Like, those guys were just, I mean, it's seriously, like, the bench looks like a fourth grade team's bench. I mean, they're just like going crazy. They were so happy. Absolutely, absolutely incredible. Incredible comeback. And
we got two breaking news stories, Mike, right now. You ready for them?
I'm ready.
Kevin Durant not expected to play in the All-Star game.
Well, that's not really breaking. That's not surprising.
It was a report tonight. That's breaking news one. Breaking news two. The Mavericks say Tim Hardaway Jr. suffered a fracture of the fifth metatarsal in his left foot tonight in tonight's game against Golden State. Updates will be given as available, but this average is a 10-week absence.
That hurts.
I mean, is he their third best player or fourth best player? Third?
Yeah, I mean, somewhere there. Third, fourth, depending on what you think of Brunson, I guess. So you got, obviously, Porzingis.
And then they go, Hardaway is the third player this season felled by that injury, joining Slovenia's Vlatko Kankar and our boy, Mr. Buffet, Zion Williamson. Where is he at, by the way? We haven't heard anything about him.
Zion, I think at this point you're right. I think he's not going to be seen. He's not going to be seen for the rest of the year, is my guess.
Is my under looking good, Mike?
No.
500 games.
No, 250. You said 250.
250. Under 250.
God, he's going to play more than 250 games.
Oh, my God. I don't know, Mike. I'm not.
If he doesn't, how devastating is that if he doesn't? I mean, that's
a Greg Oden. It's a Greg Oden.
Right. I mean, it's possible, I guess, but I
mean, yeah, he's better. His ceiling's higher than Greg Oden's ceiling was, but
I don't know about that. Oden was fantastic, man. I mean, clearly
he also looked like. I still think that Craig Oden was 10 years older than he actually looked.
Maybe he was 40 when he got in the NBA. That's why he broke down.
Yeah. Anyways, let's just talk. I know we're jumping around a lot here. Let's talk Lakers really quickly.
All right.
LeBron James tonight. He joined Elite Company, Mike. Did you see he scored 25 points again tonight, Mike? And that is – hold on. I saw it somewhere. LeBron, 25 points. Oh, where? He scored 25 points in his last – oh, crud. I saw it. Oh, man, this is really dead air on the stat. Anyways – LeBron's playing really, really well. I'll see if I can find it here, but he's on an absolute tear. He's scoring 25 points. He's the oldest player to score 25 points in 18 consecutive games. There it is. I found it at Sports Illustrated. LeBron James is now the oldest player in NBA history to record 18 consecutive games with 25-plus points. Tonight, he was 33, 7, 6, 3, and 2. Now, I'm not going to put him in the MVP conversation, but he's putting the team on his back. Anthony Davis returned tonight. The Lakers looked a little bit better. Once again, the Nets are shorthanded. I will say this was LeBron's quote. He was asked today if the scoring run he's been on was a direct response to the challenges of the Lakers season. Here's LeBron's quote in true LeBron fashion. I basically just told myself nothing else matters besides what you do on the floor and how you continue to lead these guys. It doesn't matter the conversations that are going on outside our locker room or the narration of our ball club or whatever else is going on, the injuries, all that stuff. Nothing else matters because what I bring to the table every single night. How positive I can continue to lead these guys no matter the outcome. And if I have a position to play this game the way I do, then go out and make the most of it. So stay low and keep firing is the model I've been on for. I don't know however long it's been, but I don't have an excuse. I won't make one. It's a lot of gobbledygook there, but him basically saying,
I'm
going to try to do whatever it takes. And all right. Listen, he's been on a tear, and I know they've been terrible. I sent you that comical stretch to start the game where he hiked the ball to Russell Westbrook, it was a disaster.
The team's a mess, but LeBron has been beyond spectacular. All right, so I have a little quiz for you.
Okay, go ahead.
LeBron James related quiz. I'm going to give you some statistical categories, and you're going to tell me. I'll give you his statistics for this year.
Okay.
And you tell me whether they are higher or lower or better or worse than his career averages. So we're talking about his career averages compared to this year.
Okay.
So this year he's averaging 36.7 minutes per game, more or less than his career.
Well, that's more. That's more again.
Less. He's averaging 38.2 minutes.
Okay.
For his career. This year he's shooting 51.8% from the field, higher or lower than his career average.
Well, it's got to be higher because he's got to be around 50, right?
Higher. His career average 50.4.
Okay.
3-point percentage this year, he's shooting 35.5%.
That's probably higher, but
it's higher. That's higher.
Not by 1%.
By 1%. He's a career 34.5%.
Okay.
3-point shooter. Free throw percentage this year, he's shooting 75.6%.
Well, that's got to be higher because he's been terrible free throws.
That's higher. Cool. 73. He's surprisingly 73%. I
would have thought it was lower than that.
I would have thought it was lower. I would have thought he'd been flirting with 70, 71, somewhere in there. Rebounds, 7.7 rebounds per game this season.
I think I remember reading he was like averaging like 7 for his career coming into this year. So I'm gonna say that's higher.
That's correct. He's averaging 7.4 for his career. Assists, 6.3.
That's probably pretty close. I'm going to say higher on that one too, but...
He's lower. That's lower. He's career 7.4. So he's averaging the same number of rebounds and assists, 7.4. Blocks, he's got 1.1 blocks this year.
Lower, probably.
No, that's higher. It's higher. 0.8 for his career. And then he's averaging the same number of steals, 1.6, and turnovers. His regular season turnovers this year, 3.2. Higher or lower? This is the last one. Well, I guess we got one more after the turnovers, but
probably higher because he's probably handling the ball more.
Lower. lower turnovers. 3.2, his career average is 3.5. Then he's averaging 29 a game. Second in the NBA, by the way, to Durant, who's at like 29.3. LeBron's at 29.0.
Are you making an MVP case for a guy whose team is terrible, or are you just saying that this is
ridiculous? No. I'm just saying it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, we had him, what, 10 games into the year. I was finally saying, I think Father Time is starting to get him. And it is getting him in certain ways. Like, he's definitely changed.
He's doing all this in less minutes, Mike.
He's shooting way more threes per game. I don't have that stat in front of me, although I could probably pull it up here.
He's shooting almost 8 threes per game, I bet.
This year he is, he's up to 8 threes a game. 2.8 threes made per game, averaging shooting 7.9 threes per game. So his career.
What was his 3-point percentage you said this season?
35.
Okay.
35. So in his career, he's 1.5 threes made per game, 4.5 threes taken per game.
So is this increase to almost 4? I mean, by the
so he's shooting a lot more threes. He's not really getting to the basket nearly as much, and yet he's shooting a higher percentage than his career for a guy who already shoots 50%. He's ridiculous. And I think you just look at what the totality of, there's no question that the totality of what he's done in his career is just, it's unbelievable. It's going to be, by the time he's done, whenever that is, he's going to own every single
He's going to get Kareem's number, right? He's going
to
get it, right?
He has to, yeah. I mean, he has to at this point. Unless
he gets a devastating injury.
Unless there's a catastrophic injury, unless he tears his ACL or he tears an Achilles or something else, I just don't see how he doesn't get there. And the sustained peak that LeBron has, nobody's matching it. Even when you think about as good as Kareem was at the end of his career and as good as Karl Malone was for as long as he was, neither one of those guys even came close to approaching what LeBron is doing at his age. And it's incredible. It's a testament to how good he is, and it's also a testament to how crappy the Lakers are that he's been this good and they are just completely floundering. Now, granted, they've been without Davis, but I don't know. Has there been a guy whose reputation in the league has dropped as quickly as Anthony Davis has since they won that title?
No.
He's not considered to be, certainly he's not a top five player in the league at this point. I think you could probably debate whether he's a top 10 player at this point.
Okay, I would say, here's a question, Mike. Let me just ask you these questions.
Okay.
And I know we're not thinking long term. We're talking this season right now.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't want you to take into fact age or anything. If I said you could have Evan Mobley or Anthony Davis, which do you think LeBron would take for this season right now?
Pooh, man. I still think you want Davis. I still think the ceiling is higher with Anthony Davis right now, just from an offensive standpoint. But am I sure that Anthony Davis is going to be on the court in May and June? I would say I'm not 100% sure of that. So, yeah, I mean, if you say which guy do you want for the next 5 years, I think you definitely want Mobley. I don't think there's even a question. But I think if you talk about who do you want this year, I still think Davis's offensive ceiling is higher than Mobley's.
Okay.
Even though Mobley is probably his equal, if not better, on the defensive end of the floor, at least this year. Maybe super motivated playoff level intensity Anthony Davis is better. But man, it's going forward, I don't think there's any doubt you want Mobley over Anthony Davis.
Speaking of big men with on the offensive explosions, I'm switching topics here, Mike.
Okay.
Let's talk Joel Embiid just really quickly.
Okay.
Did you see the StatMuse of his last – the StatMuse tweet of his last 5 games?
I did not see that. Okay.
His last 5 games, 38 points in 31 minutes, 40 points in 37 minutes, 50 points in 27 minutes, 32 points in 29 minutes. And tonight, Mike, he had – 42 points in 33 minutes. It's his fifth straight game where he's had more points than minutes.
That's pretty good.
That's ridiculous. So like, and then Jokic tonight went 28-21-9. They're 1-2 right now, right, for MVP?
I think so. Because Durant's injury,
I think it's going to hurt him big time. And him being out with COVID stuff and the Nets. I mean, I would have to say Durant's out by the time this injury is all said and done. Right?
Yes, I think Durant can't get back in it. There's no way Durant's going to miss 2 months. See, there's no way.
So those two guys, right? Who would be the other person?
I think Giannis. Steph has dropped off. Steph is
Do you see Steph's stats from yesterday? He was 1 of 14.
Shot the ball. He's definitely, this is like the worst shooting season of his career since his rookie year.
So Steph Curry was 1 of 13 from three 2 nights ago. He is the first player ever to win a game when missing 12 threes and only making one. All the other players are a combined 0 of 6 in such games. There you go. Fun fact. It's the worst shooting performances of Steph Curry's career, minimum 20 attempts, 6 of his 7 are from this season.
Yeah, Steph has definitely dropped off, let's put it that way. I don't think there's any question about that he is not at the level. All right, so let's just read. I'm going to just give you the statistical resumes of the three guys that I think are still in it at this point. So let's start with, who do you want to start with? You want to start with Giannis?
You start with Giannis because he's talk about. So go ahead.
Okay. I don't necessarily want to talk about him. I'm just going to throw it out there. So Giannis has played in 39 games. He's averaging 32 minutes a game. He's shooting 53% from the field, 71% from the line, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, a block and a half, 28 points overall. So he's fourth in the league in scoring. He's sixth in the league in rebounding. He's 21st in the league in assists. He's third in PER, so 30.98. So pretty good season.
Yep.
Pretty good season. Now, hard to argue with those stats. Embiid. Joel Embiid has played in 35 games. Basically the same amount of minutes, 32 minutes. Shooting just under 50% from the field, 39% from three, 81% from the line, 10.7 rebounds, 4.5 assists, averaging 28.7 points a game, just ahead of Giannis. So he's 28.7 points per game, third in the league, 10.7 rebounds, 10th in the league, 4.3 assists, 44th in the league, and a 31.26 PER, which is second in the league. It's amazing to me. Whenever I look at the assist numbers, I'm always kind of amazed that like 4.3 is 44th in the league. That to me seems kind of hard to believe, because it means that there's whatever, we got 30 teams. It almost feels like you'd have to have more guys averaging 4.3 assists, but it's not. But every time I look at those numbers of where guys are in terms of their assists, I'm always surprised by where guys rank. All right, now our boy Jokic. Jokic just played 40 games, 33 minutes, 57% from the field, 36% from three, 79.3% from the line, 13.8 rebounds, 7.6 assists. So he is seventh in scoring, 26 a game, second in rebounding, almost 14 a game, ninth in assists with 7.6, and first in PER at 33.26. And he is carrying a team that, in all honesty, I mean, I don't know. What is Denver? They're four games above 500 without what arguably would have been their second and third best players. To me, if I had to cast a vote right now, I would vote Jokic.
I think it's Jokic or Embiid, Mike. But you're probably right. It's probably Jokic right now because his team is pitiful without him.
And I think, again, it comes down to how do you define value? If you're defining which team, well, I guess, again, none of these teams can survive without their best player. But the fact that Jokic is carrying a team without two of their three best players is pretty incredible. I think if the Bucks get to the top of the East and they finish first, I think there's a case to be made for Giannis. I think Embiid's going to have a hard time because I don't see Philly going on some huge run and being a first or second seed in the East. Now, maybe if there's a Simmons trade out there, or maybe if Simmons somehow comes back and is functional, maybe that happens. But I think the case for Jokic as a guy who's carrying a depleted roster is going to be stronger than Embiid's case. Now, look, if Embiid keeps doing what he's done in the last four games, then sure. But history tells us that's probably not going to happen. If I was betting, I think I'd put my money on Jokic right now. But any one of those three guys seems like a pretty good candidate. And look, LeBron...
If he continues on this tear, Mike, like, I mean, if
statistically, he's just been phenomenal. And if the Lakers can somehow figure out a way to right the ship, and because the West is down, they're not that far back from creeping up into a top four seed. If Davis comes back and plays the way that he's capable of playing and Westbrook semi figures it out, is there a chance that the Lakers could play well, play better for the remainder of the season and creep up into a top four seed? Now all of a sudden you're looking at those stats that we read off earlier with LeBron and you're like, why not? Why not LeBron? Again, I think
legacy.
There's going to be, I mean, the thing is that all those guys are great candidates. It's not like you're going, well, all right, we got to give it to this guy.
It's not the Derrick Rozier.
Yeah, because there's nothing else there. I mean,
LeBron was robbed that year. Sorry.
I agree. So I think any one of those guys, if I was voting today, I'd vote for Jokic.
So Jokic right now one, Embiid two, or Giannis two, or
I'd still vote Giannis. I'd vote Giannis.
Okay, so, then you're going Giannis, Jokic, Embiid. Giannis, Embiid, LeBron four.
LeBron four at this point, just because of the performance of the team.
Okay, got it.
More so than his individual performance. And look, Embiid's been great. My feelings about Embiid are probably clouded by the fact that I'd like to see him do it for an extended period of time in the playoffs and carry a team.
It's a regular season award, Mike.
Doesn't mean I can't be biased by what I've seen in the past. So,
all right. Well, I would say Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, LeBron.
Okay.
I just think, I just have to move Embiid up just because he's on a tear right now. So, recency bias, if you will.
There you go.
All right, Mike. Anything else you want to talk about? We talked a lot tonight.
We did. We kind of jumped all over the place. I don't think there's anything else really, honestly, that stands out to me from a basketball standpoint that we didn't hit on. You know, there's obviously lots going on all over the league with injuries and guys being in and out of lineups, and still we have COVID and the different things that are going on. But I think we touched on the major storylines where we are now. We got the All-Star game coming up, so we'll have to get to our All-Star selections
Mike,
here.
Yeah, Mike, I
next
thought about trying to get tickets for that. I'm going to pass on that opportunity.
I understand. Where are the tickets at right now?
$1,900.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand why you passed. I'm going to have a nice seat on my couch for the game, so I'll enjoy
it.
Well,
I was more trying to go to Saturday night. I wasn't really super worried about the All-Star game. I want to go for the three-point contest, the skill stuff. That's what I want to go for.
Yeah, it'd be
and
fun.
That was even like $850-900. So,
all right. Yeah, there you go.
Pass.
Yeah. Hard pass. It's a hard pass. Understood.
All right. Go Cavs, Mike.
You got your dad joke ready or no?
Oh yes. Hold on. I have a dad joke. A kid told me it, and I didn't want to forget it today.
You wrote it down?
I emailed it to myself. So you can tell me your dad joke.
All right, I got two. So we'll bookend it. All right, we'll bookend it.
Okay, go ahead.
So I just bought a new horse. I named him Mayo. Because mayonnaise. All right, let's hear yours.
All right, here we go. Why do cows wear bells?
I don't know. Why?
Because their horns don't work.
That's a good. I like it. That's a good one. That's solid. That's solid. Okay, here's mine. I got to make sure I don't screw it up, so I got to think. The bar is 5 minutes from my house, but my house is 45 minutes from the bar. The difference is staggering.
That's a good one.
Anyway, all right, so those are our dad jokes. This has been our NBA podcast. We appreciate you listening. We have a couple of really good episodes coming up, and we also had a really good one that released on Monday with Billy Hansen. Got to dive into some things about sports performance anxiety, so if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, that is a very interesting episode. Coming up on Friday, we have Tristan Smith, who won multiple state championships as a high school player in Amityville, New York. And Tristan now is with Fit Labs USA that he started in Texas, working with athletes of all different sports. And then coming up next week, we have Mark Hendrickson, one of only 12 people, although I've also seen 13, Jay, so I'm not sure which one's right, but one of either 12 or 13 people to have played both in the NBA and Major League Baseball. And that was a record long pod that we have coming out next week. We talked to Mark for almost 2 hours. We touched on a million different things. Great episode. So make sure you check that out. Thanks for sticking with us tonight. Thanks for putting up with our dad jokes. And we appreciate all of you listening and being a part of our audience. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.